I watched Carol Burnett and Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin, and I just wanted to be like them. And I didn't realize that I was going to dress up like a woman and kind of be like them, but they made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. When I learned about gender fluidity, as soon as I heard that description, I'm like, oh my God, that's me.
That's me, yeah. Do you miss when drag was underground?
No, because I make more money.
March, march, sweep you along.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Putin promises to probe Chechnya's gay purge, singing the praises of a queer composer and suffragist, and revealing the secrets of Pandora Box. Those stories and more this week, now that you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Frances O'Brien.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending May 6th, 2017. There was some relatively hopeful news this week about the horrifying attempt by officials in the mostly Muslim Russian region of Chechnya to exterminate gay and bisexual men, or those perceived to be. At last count, more than 300 men had been rounded up and placed in one of at least six gay concentration camps, where they're beaten, starved, and shocked in homemade electric chairs until they provide the names of all their gay friends. Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov has boasted to reporters that the region will be free of homosexuals before Ramadan begins at the end of May. The independent Russian newspaper Novaya Gazeta, which first broke the story, reports that at least 30 men have now died, some during torture and others at the hands of their own families. Chechen police are telling Muslim families with gay children to murder them before the authorities do it for them. Honor killings by relatives of those who shame their families are not uncommon.
Svetlana Zakharova is with the Russian LGBT Network. She assessed the situation during a recent interview on the Turkish Radio and Television Corporation program, TRT World.
Russia is a homophobic country, but we have never seen such a level of violence. We have never heard about such a massive campaign about any group of people in the modern Russia. So what's going on in Chechnya right now is just unprecedented.
Chechnya is a mostly autonomous region of Russia with its own government and court system, but it's still part of the Russian Federation. President Vladimir Putin had dismissed the allegations about what the government of his good friend, Ramzan Kadyrov, was doing. But there was word late this week that Putin has finally agreed to an official investigation into what he called the well-known information or rumors about what is happening to men in Chechnya with a non-traditional sexual orientation. The announcement came soon after German Chancellor Angela Merkel reportedly confronted Putin on the issue during a rare visit to Moscow earlier this week. Once again, Svetlana Zakharova.
First 2 weeks, the federal authorities were absolutely silent about this situation, and they didn't talk about it despite all the international pressure. They kind of pretended that it's not happening in Russia. But now they started to do something, and at first the prosecutor's office of Chechnya stated that they are going to open the investigation, and then we have information that the Federal Investigative Committee started to do something. So there is still hope that like all the responsible sides will be punished. It's not just about discrimination of homosexual people. It's about people being tortured and killed.
It remains to be seen whether this is nothing more than an attempt to pacify overwhelming world criticism or if genuine efforts will be made to stop Chechnya's anti-gay genocide.
In another of the world's homophobic hotspots, Indonesia, as many as 14 men were arrested on April 30th during raids of parties in two hotel rooms in Surabaya, the nation's second largest city. Authorities told reporters that some of the men were watching gay porn and performing deviant sexual acts. Same-gender sex is not illegal in predominantly Muslim Indonesia, so gay men are prosecuted under strict anti-pornography laws. Most people in Indonesia practice a moderate form of Islam, but the semi-autonomous province of Aceh is governed by Sharia, a strict legal interpretation of the Quran. Men caught having sex there can be punished with up to 100 lashes in the public square. According to local reports about that Surabaya hotel raid, police confiscated condoms, mobile phones, and a flash drive with allegedly pornographic videos. All the men were forced to take HIV tests, a practice that several human rights groups have condemned. Each of them faces up to 15 years in prison. Hardline Muslim lawmakers are pushing to specifically outlaw gay sex in revisions to the criminal code now being discussed in Indonesia's House of Representatives.
In better news for LGBTQ people, civil marriage equality has finally come to Bermuda. Supreme Court Judge Charles Etta Simmons issued a ruling on May 5th that native Bermudan Winston Godwin and his Canadian fiancé, Greg DeRoche, have the right to marry in Bermuda under the British Overseas Territories Human Rights Act. On the facts, she wrote, the applicants were discriminated against on the basis of their sexual orientation when the registrar refused to process their notice of intended marriage. The government argued that under Section 33 of the Marriage Act 1944, it's been an offense for the registrar to authorize a marriage knowing that it was not legal. But Simmons stated flatly that same-sex couples are entitled to be married under the Marriage Act. Local church groups, reportedly assisted by right-wing evangelicals from the U.S., pushed for a referendum on marriage equality soon after the Godwin-DeRoche lawsuit became news. Bermudans opposed marriage equality by what was fortunately a non-binding 2-to-1 margin last June. Godwin told Bermuda's Royal Gazette newspaper this week that it had been a long road to get to this stage for me and Greg, but that the ruling is a big step in the right direction.
All eyes in France and around the world have been on the country's May 7th presidential runoff election, pitting centrist Emmanuel Macron against far-right Marine Le Pen, who has campaigned for the repeal of marriage equality. It may have gone unnoticed that the nation's top appeals court on May 4th rejected the effort of an anonymous 66-year-old psychotherapist to be identified on government documents as gender-neutral. In its ruling, the court stated that the duality of gender as a civil status was necessary to the social and legal organization of which it is a cornerstone, and that the recognition of a neutral gender would have deep repercussions on French law and would require numerous legislative changes. The appellant, who identifies as intersex, was born with an indeterminate gender but was labeled male on their birth certificate. A court in Germany also rejected the creation of a third sex category last year. Alternatives to male or female on official documents, third gender or gender X, are currently only available to the citizens of India, Australia, New Zealand, and Nepal.
But the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear a challenge this week to a California law that bans therapists from trying to change the sexual orientation of LGBTQ patients under the age of 18. Such so-called reparative, or pray-the-gay-away therapy, has been denounced by every reputable mental health organization in the Western world as useless at best and psychologically damaging in many cases. The law applies to licensed doctors, psychologists, family therapists, and social workers. Violators can be disciplined by state licensing boards. The ban was challenged by licensed therapist and minister Donald Welch, who said it violates his religious rights. California officials urged the high court not to hear the appeal, arguing that the law only affects state-licensed therapy sessions. It does allow licensed providers to refer minors to religious leaders. A handful of other U.S. states also ban so-called conversion therapy for minors. Democrats have introduced a bill to outlaw the practice nationwide, but it has little chance of passage in the Republican-controlled Congress.
In this week's queer news from Trumplandia, the U.S. president's second nominee for Secretary of the Army has bowed out even before Senate confirmation hearings could be scheduled. At around the time that the Pentagon was opening military service to transgender enlistees, Republican Tennessee State Senator Mark Green said at a town hall meeting,
"Now, if you poll the psychiatrists, they're going to tell you that transgender is a disease."
In announcing that he was withdrawing his nomination to give the president the ability to move forward, Green wrote that, "Tragically, my life of public service and my Christian beliefs have been mischaracterized and attacked by a few on the other side of the aisle for political gain." That claim failed to take into account that the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Republican John McCain, had expressed serious reservations about Green's nomination. Trump's first choice for Army Secretary, Wall Street billionaire Vincent Viola, backed out in February because of the complications of getting through the Defense Department's conflict of interest rules. Navy Secretary nominee Philip M. Bilden cited similar reasons for withdrawing his candidacy. Of the 58 posts at the Pentagon that require Senate confirmation, only one, Defense Secretary Jim "Mad Dog" Maddox, has been filled so far. The Trump administration hasn't even announced nominations for most of the others.
And finally, President Trump's much-anticipated religious freedom executive order this week turned out to be much ado about nothing. Responding to reports earlier in the week about what Trump was planning, including restricting women's access to health care and allowing licenses to discriminate against LGBTQ people, proudly out U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin charged Trump with being played as a puppet by Vice President Pence to advance an extreme right agenda. But after reviewing the exact wording of the edict, the ACLU, which had first promised to file a lawsuit against it, decided that the order was virtually toothless. The ACLU's first Latino and first openly gay executive director, Anthony Romero, called the signing ceremony an elaborate photo op with no discernible policy outcome. President Trump's prior assertions about this order, he wrote, have proven to be a textbook case of fake news.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 6th, 2017. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
This is Lucia Chappell with a News Wrap update from Paris, France. In a landslide victory, independent candidate Emmanuel Macron has defeated hard-right Marine Le Pen of the National Front to become president of France, the country's youngest leader since Napoleon. Progressives and LGBTQ activists around the world breathed a sigh of relief as the racist, homophobic, anti-globalist campaign of Le Pen garnered just over a third of the vote. Macron demonstrated strong support for defending and expanding LGBTQ rights. I'm Lucia Chappell.
I really wanted to get up on stage. I really wanted to perform. I had done theater like all my life. So that was the drive behind it, because it certainly wasn't how I looked the first time, because I was ugly.
A curious correspondent left alone with Pandora Box just couldn't resist taking a peek at what's inside. But first, let's march to the music of a much earlier time.
Ethel Smythe, English composer and suffragist, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Ethel Smythe was born in England in 1858. At 19, a boundless love of music landed her at the Leipzig Conservatory in Germany, befriending Peter Tchaikovsky. Smythe went on to become the most important female composer in early 20th century English music. She wrote six operas, many chamber ensemble works, and in 1891 wrote The Mass in D. Tending toward grand romantic passions, most of them with women, she became involved in the women's suffrage movement, even composing its anthem, March of the Women. Once arrested during a suffragist demonstration, Smythe spent 3 months in prison. Loyal supporters arrived and marched around the prison courtyard singing her march song as she conducted them with a toothbrush from her prison cell window. This Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Karen Burns in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Follow your favorite international LGBT radio show on Twitter at TWO Radio, read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com, and check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. There are also links to all three at thiswayout.org.
The most controversial elimination of RuPaul's Drag Race Season 2 made our next guest an eternal fan favorite. We know of only one qualified correspondent who could get her to really tell all. Show me what you got. Are you a winner? Can you make it hot? Don't be a loser. Take it to the top, make it pop. Put the pedal to the metal, hip hop, non-stop.
I'm Miss Barbecue with Miss Pandora Box from RuPaul's Drag Race Season 2.
Anybody that's eaten my cherry pie raves about it.
How's the crust?
Crispy. Oh. And a little tender in the middle.
And the fruit?
Always ripe.
Is it juicy, Pandora?
It's overflowing with juices.
Would you say your cherry pie was succulent?
I would say it's succulent and a bit moist.
You getting hungry, Kim?
I'm getting hungry.
Welcome, Pandora.
Hi.
So excited to have you here. You've done so much in different realms. Music, theater, television, of course, from RuPaul's Drag Race. I saw you got started in New York.
In Rochester, New York.
In Rochester, yeah. New York, at a club called Infinity.
I had done drag, I think like a couple months before, at a drag party where everyone was getting in drag. Or a couple people were getting in drag and other drag queens were putting them in drag. So I went there, but I was very coy, like, well, maybe, I don't know if I want to do it or not, but I really did.
Everybody's gotten in drag for the first time, and sometimes it sticks, sometimes it doesn't. What with you made it going, I want to do this?
It certainly wasn't the way that I looked, because I was fugly.
Were you a booger girl?
Only because I was dating the drag queen who put me in drag. I was dating her ex-boyfriend, and they weren't really exes, and I didn't really know that. And he came to the party with me, and I was like, oopsie. So she made me look real, real, real ugly. So I think really what made me want to do it is because I really did want to do it. Like, I really wanted to get up on stage. I really wanted to perform. I had done theater, like, all my life. So that was the drive behind it, because it certainly wasn't how I looked the first time.
Now, did you always see drag and theater coming together naturally, or did you always keep them separate?
Well, I didn't even know that drag was really a thing that you could do, like a, I'm going to say career, but at the beginning, it's like, here's a dollar, thank you for coming out.
Right.
So yeah, no, I guess I did always want to combine them, because it is a form of theater, basically.
Where do you get your ideas for your theater projects?
I wrote a lot when I was a kid, and a lot of times I was too shy to speak, so I wrote it out and wrote things. And when I was in the fifth grade, we had to write letters to our teacher, and we could write whatever we wanted to. And I wrote in the letter, I'm like, what if a student wanted to write a play and put it on for the school? Could that happen? And she said, yes, we could do that. So I wrote a play called The Trouble with Christmas, and we performed it at our school.
How old were you then?
Whatever you are in fifth grade.
Ten years old?
Yeah.
Wow. Were you in your own world? Did you have a bunch of friends? Were you that loner? Or?
I think I felt like I was a loner, especially as I got older. We moved in second grade, like halfway through, and the new school was a little tougher. I was getting picked on, and before I never really experienced that, so I think I felt like I was a loner, but I did have friends, so I wasn't really a loner. It was a lot of inner turmoil going on in my mind.
A lot of angsty stuff going on.
Well, yeah, and just because I think I didn't get myself. I didn't understand that you could be gay. That wasn't on my radar, and I think I was also, like, asexual at a certain point in time, so it's like, I didn't think about it, and we didn't know any gay people, and all I knew is that people were picking on me for this, and it wasn't really on TV a lot, so I watched, like, Carol Burnett, and Bette Midler, and Lily Tomlin, and I just wanted to be like them. And I didn't realize that I was going to dress up like a woman and kind of be like them. But I just really admired them. And they made me laugh and made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
There are very few times where you're really, really serious in your work. Do you see humor as a way of putting your message across?
at this point, even if I try to do it, that it's remotely serious, people just think I mean funny. So I can't escape it. Even if I do like a normal lip sync number and go out there and it's supposed to be serious, eventually within like a minute, it's going to be funny because they're just waiting for it. So I'm like, all right, sometimes you just have to give people what they want. And I think that definitely comedy was a defense mechanism when I was younger. I guess I'm just naturally funny.
Are you funny at home? Like with your family, with your boyfriend? Or
my boyfriend would probably say no, because sometimes I'm cranky. Because I don't know if you know, but this business can be tough sometimes.
No.
So
this business is tough.
This business called show can be tough. So sometimes at home, especially if I've been traveling, I'm tired and grouchy. And so unfortunately, he gets the brunt of it because we live together. Yeah, I'm sure he probably would rather have the show me sometimes, too.
What's the best and what's the worst part of drag?
I think the best part is just being able to entertain people. And you kind of are the master of your own destiny. Like, you can kind of pick what you want to do. Like, if you're doing a number, you're in total control of it. At the bar, you can do whatever you want, really. And I think the worst part, there's so many.
This is Barbecue with Pandora Box. Since RuPaul's Drag Race has come out and drag has gone into the mainstream, I have seen more of a, I won't say competitive, but a judgment feel from the typical person on the street who watches the show. How do you handle that queen that comes over and goes, the shoes would have been better if they were glitter, girl, or you should have had glitter on your eyebrows, or everyone thinks they're an expert now?
Yeah. Well, I would be shocked if somebody actually came in person and said anything that they say online to me or any of the queens. Because that's the thing. They don't usually say it in person, and they would never say it in person. But they will go, beep, 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 and type it and send it. I don't know what typewriter makes that noise, but, you know, beep, 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 beep.
I thought that was a special typewriter you had.
Yeah, just,
it makes that noise.
I don't know. They've got that keyboard courage. And I think one of the negative sides of Drag Race is that in the show, we read each other a lot. And I think people think that they're reading, but they don't know how to read, which reading, for anyone that doesn't know, is the art form of, how would we phrase it?
Catty observations of another person.
Yeah. That are generally true, close-ish.
Close-ish.
But funny.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. It's got to have a little snark, a little humor to it.
A little bite.
Otherwise, it's not good.
Exactly.
And people online don't realize that. Well, I hope. Some of them are just assholes. That's really just what it is. They sit there. They don't have a life. They're not doing anything. Or they're like a teenager. That's why I try not to engage, because I'm like, oh my God, I do not need to be an adult yelling at a teenager. It's our social media culture that they feel like they can just be assholes. Drag Race now has that fan base. And some of them can get really, really nasty. And it's like, you're going against what RuPaul says and everything. Yeah. Like, RuPaul has literally said, stop doing this. Like, she said it on the show. She said it at one of the finales. She made a long speech about it. So.
Oh, wow. Here's a subject. Drag phobia. That's a term I've coined within the LGBT community, where the gays love who you are, but they would never date you. Or you're too much like a woman, so therefore they don't want to be around you, kind of deal.
Right.
Have you experienced that before Drag Race, after Drag Race?
Oh, yeah, all the time. We always used to say drag queens are like car accidents. Everyone wants to see one. No one wants to get involved with one.
Mm.
Yeah, because the gay culture, well, our society in general, frowns on effeminate men.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole masculinity thing, and that's really what it all stems from, because it's just, it's hard being a working woman. And I think that, yeah, I mean, I definitely had an issue dating. A lot of times they do just think that you want to be a woman, or you are a woman, or you're too effeminate. For some drag queens, that's true. And so what?
Do you miss when drag was underground?
No, because I make more money.
Do You seem very open in our conversations that we've had, although people have told me that Pandora Box does come across guarded.
We're drag queens and we are gay. So you have to be. And I actually grew up getting picked on every day. That's sometimes why my guard is up, because it's still that residual kind of thing. And also being a gay man and living this gay life, you never know what's coming for you.
That sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting. And actually, maybe this has been a cathartic journey, barbecue. And maybe I'm realizing, saying it, that that probably is a big thing that I probably don't need to do as much as I did before. You live and you learn. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I don't know, I was never really about labels or anything. I feel like it pigeonholes us into certain things. But when I learned about gender fluidity, as soon as I heard that description, I'm like, oh my God, that's me.
That's me, yeah.
I was like, that's it. Like that, where was this, like, several years ago?
Yeah, it was like, non-existent.
So labels are good in that fact that it can help you. And it did. I read that and I was like, no, that's just what I am. It's kind of like a weight was lifted off me that I didn't even know was still there. Because things that happen in your childhood can still affect you later in life. You're like, oh, shit, really? I'm not over this yet.
Do you feel like you're still coming into your own?
I do. Although I feel like that I should have happened already. I think it's this business too that kind of prevents you a little bit, because you constantly have to keep going and evolving and changing, and it makes it a little harder.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my goodness. This has been such a wonderful experience talking to you. This is one of those moments that I've always wanted to dive into with another queen and really dig deep on why we do what we do. And I think you are so talented.
Please go to PandoraBox.com. There's two X's in box. Thank you.
Because X marks the spot. This has been Pandora Box with Miss Barbecue. And we will end with a beautiful song by Miss Pandora Box called Different.
I'm different. You're different. We're different. Say, but different in what kind of way? So different, but yeah, come what may, I'm different.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Frances O'Brien, Wenzel Jones, Lucia Chappelle, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Karen Burns, and Miss Barbecue contributed program material, with thanks as always to Steve Pride. Pandora Box performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener donors, for making this program possible. It's always a good time to log on to thiswayout.org and join the family. Look for This Way Out on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2TLC Yamba, New South Wales, 4NAG Yeppoon, Queensland, 5PBA Salisbury, South Australia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned!